Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Welcome to Route 51, regional talk radio for North Central Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Mobrick. Today we focus on poverty and the efforts that are being made to address it in Wisconsin. Today and tomorrow there's a conference on the subject taking place at the Westwood Center in Wausau. It's called Understanding and Overcoming Poverty in Wisconsin. Looking at these glaring statistics, poverty was on the rise in our state even before the recent economic downturn. In 2005, out of all of the 50 states, Wisconsin had the highest rate of growth for the number of individuals living in poverty. In 2007, 1 in 7 Wisconsin children and 10.8% of the population lived in poverty. Today you'll hear from all three of the keynote speakers at the conference: John Hoffmeyer, the director for the Center on Business and Poverty at UW-Madison, Tim Smeeting, director of the Institute for Research on Poverty. He's also the author of a dozen books and hundreds of nationally published articles. And in an interview segment recorded this morning, longtime Democratic Congressman Dave Obey. As always, we will be taking your phone calls on the subject at 261-6371, 261-6371, or toll-free at 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. Now, again, the comments from Congressman Obey were pre-recorded, so we won't be getting to your questions for about another 10 or 15 minutes. But before we do that, let's introduce our two other guests, John Hoffmeyer. What are the goals of the Center on Business and Poverty, if you could describe those succinctly?
I'd be happy to, Glenn. The first goal is to work with businesses to try and do the best we can for low-income employees. The second is really very particular. We work on tax programs at the workplace. So much of the attempt now to help low-income people has to do with the tax code, that we've decided that if you're going to look for low-income people, you might as well look for them at work.
Really, the tax code is that significant?
It really is. Tim can tell you a lot also about the earned income tax credit, its importance today, and the significance that it will play as Obama continues to make changes.
And Tim Smeeting, the goals of the Institute for Research on Poverty.
Well, we're the oldest poverty institute in the nation. We've been there for 43 years, and some people might say we lost the war so far. But poverty is rising, and it's really good for me to be in a state which cares about it, which has people that care about it. And we hope to offer the best advice we can about not just what the level of poverty and the patterns of poverty are, but what we can do about it as a state.
What do you hope comes out of this two-day conference at the Westwood Center?
Well, there's a lot of important conversations going on. The governor had a summit in May in Milwaukee, and this is, in a way, the continuation. There's 5 or 6 working groups on things like housing, financial literacy, building employment, education, and so forth. And they're all networking across the state with other groups of nonprofit, for-profit, public, and other entities who are trying to do their best to help people, you know, help themselves, essentially.
So it's kind of a meeting of the minds going on there?
There's some meeting of the minds. There's some exchange of information. There's a number of people who, I didn't know you were doing that. And some idea that if we pull together, we might really make a difference here, and especially as we come out of the recession. Right now, it's fingers in the dike. Everyone is just holding on.
Now, Dave Obey spoke earlier today at the conference. What did he say that you found significant?
Well, I think the important thing, Dave pointed out how badly we would have been had we not had the stimulus bill, had the Obama people not done what they did, and it would have been a lot worse. And he also talked about the importance of passing a health insurance bill and the importance of, you know, it's okay to run a deficit now, but he understands in the long run we can't. One of the most interesting things he said was that in the 30s and 40s, it turns out there was a congressman in this area, I've forgotten his name, but in 1938 he lost the election because he backed Social Security. And he said, can you imagine where we'd be without Social Security and Medicare today? And he said, in 30 years, people are going to say the same thing. Can you believe we had a time in this country when we were spending tons of money, more than anybody else in healthcare, and we had 50 million people who didn't have insurance.
Dave Obey's got a great institutional memory. We did talk to him this morning. I'm going to play that tape now. It's about 10 minutes long, and he touches on all those areas: poverty, health care reform, and the effect of the stimulus package.
Well, nothing ever does everything that you hope or think it will. But as a practical matter, we're only 5 months into a 30-month program. So trying to decide how it's doing now would be like trying to call the end of a baseball game after the bottom of the second. I think that it's doing what it's supposed to do. I mean, we never expected to see more than about 37-38% of that money out the first year, because government can't just throw money against the wall. They have to set up rules for spending it. They have to set up applications. But if you take a look at what's happening in northern Wisconsin, the governor and I announced a $6 million project for sewer and water in Superior. We announced a $30 million project in Rhinelander for their water system. They've also got an airport development grant. We've got highways that are moving into construction stage all over northern Wisconsin. And all of that will help to provide jobs that otherwise would have been lost as the economy slides.
Texas Republican Senator John Cornyn just this week called the stimulus package a failure. He noted that unemployment continues to go up and will probably hit 10%. Cornyn said President Obama and the Democratic leadership promised no more than 8% unemployment.
That's absolute nonsense.
That's what he said.
Well, that isn't the first time that what Senator Cornyn has said is absolute nonsense. So he's just being consistent. Let's give him credit for that. The fact is that if you go back and look at my words, and I went back and checked every word in the congressional record, if you go back and look at what I said at the time, I said that the purpose of this package was not to sprinkle money around the country. The purpose was to simply try to soften the blow and reduce the unemployment levels that you would otherwise have. And I stated at the time that I expected unemployment to go well above 10%. The question was whether it would go even higher than that.
It would go well above 10% even if the stimulus package was passed.
Yes. I mean, most economists underestimated how serious the problem was. But if you go back again and check my words, I told people that I thought that the package, if anything, would undershoot the mark in terms of what was necessary. And the fact is that when people are out of work and when the Federal Reserve has shot its last bullet, when interest rates are already at record lows, when the housing sector isn't going to lead you out of the recession like it normally does, when the auto industry isn't going to lead you out of recession like it normally does, the only bullet left in your gun is government investment. For people like Senator Cornyn and the Republican leadership in the Congress in general to squawk about what we're doing, it's like the crowd that ran the car into the ditch now squawking about the way that the recovery crew is trying to pull a car out of the ditch. They don't have a really good track record in terms of running this economy.
Will we get a national health care bill with a public insurance option signed into law? What's your best guess at this point?
I wouldn't call it a national health insurance bill. I would simply call it insurance reform that is enforced by the federal government. What we're trying to do is to change the rules of the road for insurance companies. We're trying to put the cop back on the beat or the umpire back on the field. And we're trying to say to insurance companies, if you want to sell insurance in this country, you cannot discriminate on the basis of pre-existing conditions. We don't want people to be locked into a job that they dislike because they've got a kid with a serious health problem and they won't be able to get health coverage if they move. We want to get rid of the lifetime limit on what insurance companies will pay if you get really sick. We want to put some limits on what you have to pay before your insurance takes over in case you hit a catastrophic problem. And then, so what we want to do is to give people the same choice of private plans with some consumer protection rules built in, the same choice that members of Congress have in their plan. And then we want to add one option to that, which is a public option similar to Medicare, so that we have a way of keeping the insurance companies honest in terms of cost.
Do you think that package will pass both the House and Senate and be signed into law?
I think it's going to be very hard. It's really an uphill fight. I think we will have it in the House package. It looks like they won't have a strong public option in the Senate package. I'm very much for a public option. And what I find amusing is this. Earlier in the debate, insurance companies said, oh, we don't want a single-payer plan like Canada because there should be competition. Okay, so now we're saying, let's have competition, but we want a little bit more competition than we have right now in the form of a public plan. And now the insurance industry says, oh, no. We don't want a government-run program. What do they think Medicare is? What do they think Medicaid is? What do they think the veterans' health care programs are? I mean, those are all programs overseen by the government that provide consumers with a pretty good deal.
You're in the House, you're not in the Senate, but in the Senate, why not use reconciliation? Why not get just 50 votes and have Biden break the tie if he has to in order to get a strong bill passed?
I am for doing whatever procedurally they have to do in order to give us a clean shot at passing that program. I think the Senate rules that require 60 votes are ridiculous. Only in the United States Senate can you get a majority of votes and lose. That's the way it's built in. So if they could find a way to use reconciliation to accomplish what we want to accomplish, I'd be a very happy man. I don't know if they can. I'm not an expert on Senate rules.
There have been loud protests at several forums on health care held by Democratic lawmakers this past week, including one held by Congressman Steve Kagan. Are these protests a sign that opinion is turning against national health care reform?
No. What they're a sign of is that lobbyists on K Street are financing a coordinated national operation to try to turn this debate into chaos. I mean, if you take a look at what some of the Republican leaders have said about it, I mean, there are two organizations. We have copies of both of their memos. And what they say is, come in early, spread around the room, get the front seats, and don't wait for the question period to begin. Begin to shout out, have others begin to shout out. It's an instruction sheet in how to bring chaos to any public discussion. In my view, it's thuggery, it's disgraceful. Not all of the people who come to those forums are participating in that. Some people have legitimate arguments with what's being proposed. That's what America is supposed to be about. But it's not supposed to be about shouting down somebody who's come to try to help explain to the public what the choices are.
What does it say when 200 plus years after this country was founded, we're seeing rational debate and democratic elections, as far as decision making is concerned, replaced by mob rule?
What it says is that despite the fact that the public in the last election expressed a strong yearning for people to get together and find common ground, despite that fact, and despite Obama's best efforts, I think everybody will have to recognize he's leaned over backwards to try to work with Republicans. Despite that fact, you have a tiny cadre of hardcore right-wing activists who are willing to destroy the process on a daily basis in order to get their way and embarrass their opposition.
It's been 6 months since Obama was sworn in. How do you think he's doing?
I think he's doing amazingly well. I think he has restored our image abroad. I think he has taken a lot of the resentment toward America's unilateralism in foreign policy out of the mix. So I think people are listening to America again. And on the domestic front, he has had to wrestle with the worst economic crisis since the 30s. He has worked closely with us to get all of our appropriation bills through. He's worked to get the stimulus package through, which is providing significant relief to people. And I think he has established a tone of maturity and fairness and balance, which the country has badly needed.
Dave, you're going to be speaking on poverty at a conference in Wausau today. What are you planning on saying?
Well, nothing very shocking. I just want to remind people that the war against poverty worked. I mean, when we were really serious about attacking poverty under Lyndon Johnson, we were able, in a short period of time, to cut the poverty rate in this country by more than half. Now, there are a lot of things you need to do directly to affect people who are in poverty. But the best thing you can do long term is to set up an economy which is fair, which has fair taxes, which has a decent safety net in terms of education and training and health care, and an economy which provides decent job opportunities for everybody. I mean, we've had, since 1980, we've had a huge swing. We've had a huge movement of income up the income scale. In fact, from the year 2000 to 2006, the most well-off 10% of people in this country raked in over 90% of all of the income growth in the country. That left a lot of people behind, and it left a lot of people in poverty, and I think we have to moderate that trend and turn it around.
Congressman Dave, thanks for spending some time with us today.
You bet.
Speaking earlier today at our Wisconsin Public Studios, Public Radio Studios in Wausau, Obi, one of the keynote speakers at a conference on understanding and overcoming poverty in Wisconsin. We've got the other keynote speakers with us today, John Hoffmeyer, the director for the Center on Business and Poverty at UW-Madison, and Tim Smeeting, director of the Institute for Research on Poverty. We also want to hear from you. If you want to react to what Mr. Obi just said, you can give us a call at 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. And I just want to mention also that one of the declared opponents to Mr. Obi in next year's election, Republican Sean Duffy, currently the district attorney of Ashland County, is scheduled to be our only guest on Route 51 next week at this time. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We'll be back after this.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
For more information on regional programming for North Central Wisconsin, here at Wisconsin Public Radio, or to have your community event listed with us, check out our local website at wpr.org/WLBL.
Your business can reach an audience like no other in Wisconsin by supporting programming on Wisconsin Public Radio. For more information about business sponsorships, call Rick Ryer at 1-800-749-3906.
Tim Smeeting and John Hoffmeyer, one of the things that really struck me about what Dave Obi just said was that the war on poverty worked. Do you share that analysis?
Well, this is Tim Smeeting. It worked for a while. It worked when economic growth was being more widely spread. It worked for people like my dad, a union carpenter. You could make a good living just working with your back. And it worked until about the mid-70s. Then the economy went haywire. We started having a lot more children born out of wedlock, which created a lot of single-parent families. And the wage gains at the bottom of the distribution for those least educated fell. And we didn't fight back against that as hard as we could have.
Now, Mr. Obi, of course, was being very partisan, but I think he would probably argue that had Hubert Humphrey defeated Richard Nixon back in 1968 and continued Lyndon Johnson's war on poverty, that maybe some of those trends wouldn't have happened in the 70s.
I'm not sure about that. I mean, Richard Nixon was the one who increased Social Security benefits by 10%. Richard Nixon is the one who built the SSI program for the low-income, aged, blind, and disabled. It just sort of, by the time we got through the oil shock in 74 and we got to Jimmy Carter, the economy was changing drastically. It wasn't an economy, increasingly not an economy with somebody who just goes out and works hard, doesn't have a good education, could get ahead. And now we're in a situation right now where we have a safety net based on work, which doesn't bother me. That's the major public value. But where it's really hard to find work. You've got seven people looking for every job. And So it's hard when there aren't any jobs to help people who were supposed to work, and then we're going to subsidize their work.
John Hoffmeyer, your reaction to some of what you heard Dave Obey say in that last segment?
Well, staying with this same topic of whether or not the war on poverty worked, I'm sure that what Congressman Obey was talking about was probably more domestic. But what's very interesting is if you look at this same question from an international perspective, he's probably right also. We've never seen so many jobs created, so much wealth actually increase at one time in history. But as Tim said, much of that has actually not coincided since the oil shocks of the 70s with continued growth for low-income people in the United States.
You're talking about wealth being created in the late 60s when the war on poverty was instituted by Lyndon Johnson?
Well, we were talking about whether long-term the war on poverty had been successful, and I was measuring that up until today.
Up until today, okay.
And certainly if you look at China and India over the last 10 years, you've seen incredible increases in wealth.
And Tim?
I think John is absolutely right. What we had in the late 60s and early 70s was 3.2, 3.5% unemployment. Now, you just go back right now, go back 10 years to the late 90s. I used to be in New York answering questions about poverty, saying that the Midwest had made the most progress against poverty because all of our manufacturing jobs, our auto industry, and everything was going great guns in the late 90s. When that unemployment rate went down, everybody who wanted a job could get one. And the biggest declines in poverty in the country were in the Midwest. Now the wheels have come off. It's the exact opposite. The automobile industry is in terrible shape. All those manufacturing industries that fed into it are in bad shape. And unemployment's going to hit, I think it'll probably get to 10% here in Wisconsin. It's 9.4 now.
And again, Obey said that he predicted that even when the stimulus bill was up for debate. He took offense at Republican efforts to say that it is a failure because the unemployment rate is more than 8%. Obey, and I was at some of these meetings, claimed all along it would be 10%, even if the stimulus was passed.
If it was so easy to keep unemployment at a certain rate and keep the government or the economy growing at a certain rate, we'd be doing it. It's not easy. We're holding on to the tail of the tiger here. We don't have the tiger by the jaw.
We're talking to Tim Smeeting. He is the director of the Institute for Research on Poverty. John Hoffmeyer, the director for the Center on Business and Poverty at UW-Madison. We just heard from Congressman Dave Obey. What do you think about the subject of poverty and the way we should address it? Give us a call, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. We'll be taking your phone calls right after this news.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from the Bemis Company, a global manufacturer of flexible packaging and pressure-sensitive materials, proud to support its employees and the communities in which they live. Information is available on the web at bemis.com.
We're back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. I'm Glenn Moberg. And our guests today, John Hoffmeyer, the director for the Center on Business and Poverty at UW-Madison, and Tim Smeeting, director of the Institute for Research on Poverty. He's also written a dozen books and hundreds of articles on the subject of poverty and income inequality. We also heard from Congressman Dave Obey, one of the keynote speakers at a conference on the subject going on in Wausau. We heard from him in the first half hour, and we'll be discussing his comments and discussing the overall persistent problem of poverty and what are you going to do about it. If you've got opinions, if you were listening during the first part of the show and you want to react to what Dave Obey said, our lines are open for you. 261-6371, that's 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742, that's 780-9742. And I have been asked to remind our listeners that if they want to attend the conference that's going on at the Westwood Center, there is still space available. Tomorrow is the final day of the session. We were talking before the break about the war on poverty, Lyndon Johnson's ambitious effort, which Dave Obey said was working before it was, or at least portions of it, were dismantled. And we seem to have some disagreement, I guess, between the two of you. I don't know if we do or not on whether or not All of that makes sense to go back to the kinds of things that we were trying in the 60s. Would they work again in the new millennium?
I think there's opportunity, but I think much of the opportunity comes with new ideas. For example, in Milwaukee, we've started 24 startups in the last 2 years. 18 of those in the inner city are still up and running. I think opportunities like that address some of what Tim was saying, where if there are seven people looking for every one job that's available, we're not going to get there based on that kind of system. So using some more entrepreneurial approaches may work.
One of the things that you hear from critics of the stimulus package and even the widely popular cash for clunkers package is that we shouldn't be adding to the deficit right now. I mentioned Sean Duffy, the Republican who's running against Dave Obie. I was looking at his website, and he says the cash for clunkers program is no more than borrowing another $2 billion from the Chinese to put on the backs of our grandchildren.
Well, I'm not sure that that's right. I really think that I would agree with John that we need to – economic growth is going to help us. We're not going to quite grow our way out of this. And without help from the government, without running a deficit now, the deficit would just get bigger because you have this vicious circle. People don't spend. Employers don't sell. Employers don't sell. They lay people off. People get laid off. They spend less and so forth, and it just keeps going. So, I mean, that's what Keynes said. That's what – we believed in, and especially in the late 60s, that fiscal policy ought to be there and push hard, just like it did in the late 90s, so that we get closer to an unemployment rate in this country of 3% and 4%. Then there's more jobs, more opportunities. Businesses which are doing well have to share more of their income with working people, and we'll be better off. But we're a long way from that now. We're going to be in deep water for at least a couple years here. Unemployment's going to go up, and the poverty is going to go up this September and next September.
Alan Greenspan said we appear to have hit bottom. We're going to turn the corner. You don't share that optimism.
Well, maybe we've turned the corner in terms of the stock market. Maybe we've turned the corner in terms of retail sales going back up, but we're not going to build a lot more houses here. There's a big inventory to be sold off, and businesses aren't going to hire more people until they've got the people who are already just working part-time or who are on their call, who used to work for them, back in the jobs and so forth. And in the interim, technology has marched on, and people are going to try and do the thing which we call productivity, which is really the issue, which is really why John is right. If you don't have some education, you're much more likely to find that you've lost your job to a computer or to some other mechanization. Not to mention the fact that the idea that jobs are going to flee Wisconsin for China is wrong. The idea that jobs might leave Wisconsin because it's cheaper to produce goods and services in Tennessee, Alabama, Mississippi might be right, but not if we have a well-educated workforce when we come out of this.
Are you saying that the job flight overseas to China and Mexico isn't something that we should be concerned about?
We should be concerned, but it's not that big. It is not happening. And Let me give you an example. Those little refrigerator, you got a little refrigerator under your desk there?
No, I don't. I'm not.
Well, the Chinese own those. And where do you think they produce those? South Carolina. In other words, you're ignoring insourcing. We're ignoring the fact that that Volkswagen I'm driving out there, I hope it's still there, was built in this country, that those Toyotas you're buying were built in this country, that the BMWs and other cars were built in this country by those organizations, hiring American workers who are producing those cars. You have to look at it from both sides.
I want to go back to the challenger to Congressman Obie, and maybe where they agree on issues of the deficit. Because when it comes down to it, cash for clunkers, it's a major program, but it's nothing compared to Medicare. If you're looking at the $36 trillion that we've accumulated essentially to make sure that Medicare continues, if in fact we want to continue it the way it is, that's big time debt. And when you start looking at the possibility of, for every household in the United States, there being $186,000 of debt that we've accumulated before the stimulus plan, those are big time numbers that we ought to worry about. And I think the congressman and his challenger would both be concerned with that.
John, you were mentioning the increase in wealth in this country going up to the present day. Again, one of the things that Mr. Obie said this morning was that a big problem is that 90% of that wealth during the Bush years went to the very top earning families in this country. And that the disparity in wealth between the top earners, between the very rich and the very poor, is greater now than it's been in this country since the Great Depression.
I think we've had a failure of stewardship among people in the wealthiest class. And I'm not trying to cast aspersions on a whole group, but among certain leaders who had a real responsibility, and I should say a real opportunity to garner satisfaction in their lives. Some of them failed us. And I think it's really a problem, and I think it's a challenge to the stewards, especially stewards of finance, to recover from the mistakes they've made and do us better.
Tim, do you think we need more taxes on the rich?
I think that's a strategy, but it's a limited strategy. I think that the idea that you worked for a year and you defined your income as a capital gain so you could pay 15%, and not as earnings, which it really was, so you paid like everybody else, is baloney. We need to get rid of that. But I want you to know that two sorts of people got hurt in this recession, two types of wealth. The wealth people had in their self-directed retirement accounts, that includes pretty well-to-do professors like me, and some of those guys were trading at the top. But the big problem is housing. The main wealth of the middle class was in their house. Thank God most people still own their own homes. Most people aren't below water, but the value of that home is much less now than it was. And so the biggest decline in wealth, I think, is in the sector that's not coming back. The stock market has started to come back. The housing market hasn't at all. And so it's the middle class again who are in trouble because of the decline in their house value, if you can sell it. And our labor market isn't working so well because if you're in Wausau and somebody finds you a job in Racine or in Beloit, and, well, gee, great, we'll go. Well, we got to sell the house first. Sometimes that doesn't work too well.
How serious a problem is this disparity of wealth?
It can be pretty, it depends on how you look at it. Here are the basic facts.
I mean, you go into some of our inner city areas, and it's shocking. It's shocking to look at the poverty. It's shocking to look at people sleeping in cardboard boxes on the sidewalks in what is the richest and the greatest nation on the planet Earth. And then you go just outside those cities and you see these mansions. You see people owning multiple mansions in far-flung places, not only in the United States, but around the world. How can these two worlds coexist same country?
Just go to Milwaukee County. Our report shows that the poverty rate in inner city Milwaukee is 56% for children. The poverty rate in Whitefish Bay, Wauwatosa, Cedarburg, Brown Deer is 2%. That's 25 times different. So we found a way to do that, unfortunately.
I think an interesting question just for us as a species is whether or not it's at all fair for some people to do as well as they're doing when others are doing so poorly.
Let's go to our phones, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. Let's go to Tom in Wausau. Tom, you're on Route 51.
Thanks. I have a question about jobs programs. One of the things that I've been disappointed in the stimulus package has been that we haven't patterned something around the idea that we did during the Great Depression, putting people to work. There's a summer program for young people, but we don't seem to have anything like that for older folks.
Are you talking about things like the Civilian Conservation Corps and the Works Projects Administration, two of the
exactly.
Alphabet Soup programs in the 30s?
Exactly. I think one of the keys to getting people out of poverty is to have the right to a job at a livable wage. And I always wanted to see the government take a more active role in that.
I think one of the key issues in that regard is what's a long-term job and what's a productive job. In the days of the Great Depression, I think everything that was done along the lines that have just been mentioned were effective for that time. It's not at all clear to me that it would be effective to do the same thing today. Now, one of the issues about this particular stimulus plan is that we've still only seen about 3% of the job creation that's expected. So if we judge today based on what's happened so far, I think people may be, in Congressman Obie's words of today, trying to judge a ball game by the end of the second inning. And I'm not sure we really should do that.
Tom, thanks so much for the phone call. Tim, do we need something, something along the line of the government being the employee of or the employer of last resort?
Well, I have some issues with that. I would agree with John. I think if you have things that are, quote, shovel ready, a favorite quote of ours, weatherizing low-income houses, getting rid of lead-based paint, and things like that, then maybe we can do it. But in order to set this up and to do this, it takes an awful lot of time. The Works Progress Administration, you remember, took 2 or 3 or 4 years to work, and then nothing really worked until, as Dave Obey mentioned this morning, the greatest job creator of all time was called World War II. You took a bunch of guys and you put them somewhere else fighting a war, and everyone else at home, from Rosie the Riveter on down, got in there and went to work.
Talk about an economic stimulus package. You had the the government manufacturing tanks, manufacturing airplanes, armaments, putting everyone to work.
I don't think either of us are suggesting that we do that again
exactly.
Right now, but looking historically, it certainly was effective.
261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. We're talking about poverty in Wisconsin and in the United States, the causes, the solutions. We want to hear from you. Give us a call. Our guest today, Tim Smeeting and John Hoffmeyer, and we'll be taking your calls right after these short messages.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing Employee Benefits Administration, Integrated Health Management, and Pharmacy Benefits Administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
Subject today is poverty. The show is Route 51. I'm Glenn Moberg, and our guest today, two of the keynote speakers at a conference on the subject at the Westwood Center in Wausau, Tim Smeeting, the director of the Institute for Research on Poverty, and also John Hoffmeyer, the director for the Center on Business and Poverty at UW-Madison. We also heard from Congressman Dave Obey during the first part of our program. And once again, Mr. Obey talked about the stimulus package. It's very hard, gentlemen, to disprove a negative. He said he thought unemployment would go up past 10%, even if the stimulus package was passed. But he said things would be so much worse if it wasn't. And if you remember 6 months ago, we were worried that we were on the brink of a second Great Depression. Bread lines, failures of banks across the country, manufacturing facilities shutting down. That hasn't happened, has it?
Oh, I really don't think it has. And it's still, a lot of us hold our nose when we see that we actually have to bail out some of the guys who got us into this situation, that being the finance industry. But without a finance industry and without banks, you're not going to go anywhere. Without capital to borrow so that those people that John talked about earlier, those entrepreneurs who want to get started, without somebody willing to make a home loan to somebody who's got a job, we're going to be stuck forever. So we avoided the worst of it, I think. But now we have to deal with what's left, and what's left is really hard on workers for the next couple of years and on state budgets. I want you to know that whoever's governor next year, and I assume it'll be Mr. Doyle again, are going to find that they're going to be looking at probably a very, very big deficit, because when you're in a recession, the demand for state services goes up and the revenues go down, and you got to fill that gap somehow.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily assume it's going to be Mr. Doyle if you look at his poll numbers, but we'll see. Politics is something that's awfully hard to predict in this country. Mr. Obey's biggest priorities and the president's biggest priority is national health insurance reform. And how critical do you think that is, either of you, to lifting the poorest Americans out of the poverty level?
Well, I'm going to go back to the $36 trillion hole. And even if we just looked at this from the perspective of what that does for us if we don't fix the Medicare problem, that's going to have incredible impact on poor people. If we think about, you know, where poor people have found benefits, it's partly through government, but it's also partly through economic growth. And neither of those two can take place unless we can deal with this deficit. So from my perspective, the healthcare debate is about working out the future for our whole economy, which, you know, lifts all boats.
One of the Democratic candidates in the 70s, George McGovern, said he favored Medicare for all. If you look at the deficit that we're facing right now, the projected deficit for the Medicare program, that doesn't seem like such a good idea.
Well, it doesn't, it doesn't. It doesn't, but the idea that Medicare, most people believe Medicare has worked. Medicare has not been completely funded, and Medicare has been funded by people who paid into the fund in good times, and the Treasury spent that money somewhere else and gave the fund an IOU. And the trouble is those IOUs are coming due because there are more and more elderly people. The idea of a well-funded Medicare for everybody, where we could have some leverage on insurance companies and on providers and try and curb the runaway cost growth, that may not be such a bad idea. But we're caught in the classic problem. The three issues in healthcare are cost, quality, and access, and you can't have all three of them together. Because if you spend a lot of money and you have a lot of access, you go broke. If you want quality healthcare, you have to be able to fund new ideas. But the big goal right now seems to be making sure that everyone in this country has access to regular healthcare.
Well, the boogeyman is rationing. If this passes, a public option, the fear is that we're going to be rationing services, and particularly some of the elderly won't be able to get what they want to get when they want it.
Well, we're already rationing, and so it will simply get worse. And when you look at it today, I think the old people have something to be worried about. And this is a statistic that some people will debate, if half of the healthcare spending in the country goes to people in the last year of their life, that's an important choice. It may not be a choice that we make forever.
What do you mean we're already rationing?
Well, when you look at questions of what happens to those that don't have health insurance, they're given the emergency room care. I actually took my mom to the emergency room recently. I don't know if you've been there. I'm sure some of the people who are listening have been. It's a very difficult place to get your care. Now, you are getting something, so we can't say the ration was zero, but that's a ration that's not full.
So the argument would be that healthcare is already being rationed in the United States, and I guess you could say it's being rationed by arrogant, anonymous bureaucrats. They just all happen to work for insurance companies instead of the government.
Well, there is some real truth to that, I'm afraid. If the government is so bad, why can't we have a government-run healthcare program? And insurance companies, well, they'll take our business by offering a better product for a lower price. Gee, that would be wonderful, in my opinion. The government runs Medicare. I think you told me a story before about somebody jumping up and saying at one of these meetings, and I don't want the government touching my Medicare, which is a perfect example of someone who really doesn't understand what goes on. My mom passed away last year, God rest her soul. Medicare was there for her, and she was happy to have it. But in the future, John is right. The elderly are going to have to pay more for their health care, and so is everybody else, out of their own pockets.
Looking at poverty across Wisconsin, how much is this a big city issue versus a rural issue? How much of this is an issue facing blacks and Hispanics, minorities versus white people?
Well, I want to give John a chance here before we're done, but the big poverty problem and the big economic engine are both in Milwaukee, and Milwaukee always had a high poverty rate. But what we're seeing now, the big thing we're seeing now across the state, if you look at food stamp enrollments, for instance, 10% of the state's on food stamps, and the great majority of the growth in the last 2 years is not in Milwaukee. It's in Rock County. It's up in Superior. It's in a lot of hard-hit towns where jobs have gone, and people need to eat and turn to get that help. So the problem in our state isn't just Milwaukee anymore. It's spread out all over the place.
I'd just add that when it comes down to it, we've got to work together. It can't be rural versus urban. It can't be black versus white or brown. We have to all pull together, work toward the type of bipartisan position that President Obama had articulated and that has been difficult for us to achieve. And I think—
No, there hasn't been much bipartisanship over the past 6 months.
No, there hasn't.
But, John, your central thrust is we're all in this together, whether we like it or not.
I think that's right. And, frankly, I was talking earlier about satisfaction that the stewards of finance and government, for that matter, may be able to find. But I think it's really an issue for all of us. How do we lead satisfying lives? And if we can all put an oar in the water and pull in the same direction, I think there's hope.
We want to thank today's guest, John Hoffmeyer, the director for the Center on Business and Poverty at UW-Madison. Also, Tim Smeeting, director of the Institute for Research on Poverty. And in our first segment, Congressman Dave Obey, a Democrat from Wausau. I do want to remind you that next week on Route 51, we feature Republican candidate for Congress Sean Duffy, currently the district attorney for Ashland County and one of two announced Republican candidates seeking to replace Mr. Obey in next year's congressional election. That two-day conference, Understanding and Overcoming Poverty in Wisconsin, continues tomorrow at the Westwood Center in Wausau. It is sponsored by the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service and UW Colleges and UW Extension. And there is space for you if you want to drop by and see what's going on. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, and our on-air producer, Kelson Quisler. Also, our online producer, Scott Clark. Thanks, as always, to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Route 51 can be heard Thursdays at 5 p.m. on the Ideas Network stations, WLBL 91.9 FM Wausau, 930 AM Auburndale Stevens Point, WHBM 90.3 FM Park Falls, and now on WHRM 90.9 FM High Definition Channel 3. I'm Glenn Moberg. Thanks again for riding with us today. Until next week, we are heading out of town.